Our guest, Ptolemy Tompkins, we're talking about his work, The Modern Book of the Dead. We're going to take your phone calls and your stories. You know what we're talking about. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Ptolemy Tompkins here. Let's go to the phones in just a moment. Ptolemy, take me through, and this is all subjective, but take us through a moment when the physical body dies. What happens? In your opinion, based on the things you've gone through.
I think the most important thing that I got out of looking into the matter was this idea that the philosopher named Rudolf Steiner, in the early part of the 20th century, that the most important, biggest shock anybody or most people will ever get in their life is the discovery that they are still right there and still themselves after they die. That's the real jolt. You are right there, and that you're still George or John or David or Sarah or wherever you are, that you're right there. And everything starts from that. Things move forward, and other stuff starts to happen after that. But that initial jolt of, wait a minute, I'm still me, even though my body is no longer functioning, that's the initial revolution.
Well, do you realize, do you think you're dead right away?
Well, these are stories that go back and are very similar over time, too. The problem of the person who doesn't realize they're dead, this is an ancient scenario, and people would say, well, it's just because it makes a good story. But it's phenomenally consistent. Don't let yourself get into the position of the person who is dead but doesn't know they're dead. When the movie The Sixth Sense came out.
Yeah. Great movie, by the way.
So popular. It just grabbed people by the throat. It was a well-made movie, but there was something more to it as well, I think. I think it was telling people something they recognized. That idea that you can be dead but not know you're dead is instantly familiar and riveting to people because they get it. Some part of them says, oh, yeah, that. You don't want that.
See, I would think, okay, how come I'm not hungry? And things like that.
Well, that goes back also to that funny thing about a dream, like things you would expect to come up right away sometimes don't. The afterlife, I think, is not a dream, but it is in many ways, especially in its initial part, it's dreamlike. So that you do know some things but not know others. There's this great detail of a lot of afterlife stuff was done in World War I because so many young people lost their lives and there was so much grief and anguish, and there were a lot of smart people trying to answer the question of what happens to you at death, because death was just so intolerably widespread at that point. And there's a great story from some research done then of these two soldiers, and the war is raging, and one soldier says to the other, they're having a cigarette, and the soldier says to the other one, you notice something funny about these cigarettes? And the funny thing about the cigarettes is the fact that they're both dead.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Smoking feels slightly different after you've died. And it's a kooky detail, but it's great because it suggests this whole, why are things like a Twilight Zone so popular, where you have scenarios of suddenly a person, how many episodes of the Twilight Zone are there where the person is sort of walking around thinking they're still in the world and gradually they realize they aren't? There's that movie Carnival of Souls that came out in the early 60s. The same scenario. This woman is actually dead, but she doesn't know it. It is such a powerful scenario. Why is that? Just because it's intriguing, or is it hitting something that we know?
Or a little bit of both.
Or possibly a little bit of both.
Let's go to the phones with our special guest right now, Ptolemy Tompkins, and we're going to Lori in Tuolumne, California. Boy, my producers are trying to get me. They're going to trip me up eventually. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, Ptolemy.
Hi.
I hear you talking a lot about afterlife, but what about pre-life?
What do you mean by pre-life, Lori?
Pre-life, like before we incarnate.
Before we incarnate. Before we're even conceived?
Before we're even conceived. Isn't all time one? We're dead and we're alive at the same time, sort of like Schrodinger's cat?
Well, it goes back to that question. I'd say that goes back to the question of reincarnation. I would say that the general picture that I try to sketch that I think is actually real, that we need to move closer towards, is this picture of that does include reincarnation, and before we are alive on Earth, we are alive in a larger way, and we move down into this body, and we kind of suffer this process of amnesia in order to completely incarnate into our physical bodies. This is an idea that's everywhere. It's really universal. And I think it's sort of the core, it's the core universal idea of what happens to us, that we do move in and out of incarnations, and that becoming physically embodied entails this kind of amnesia. I mean, it's throughout ancient Greek philosophy, it's in the South Pacific, and it's in Native America. It's everywhere. It gets stated in different ways, and et cetera, and so forth. But that basic idea, we go back again and again and again, I think is the correct idea. I think I'll sort of put myself out there. I mean, I might as well say what I think. So before we incarnate, we are larger, smarter, and know what's going on, and we have to suffer kind of a sort of a stupefaction to go down into this body. For an incarnation.
Or, and the body's probably the stopgap between the pre and the post, huh?
Well, the body is where everything, and this is also this curiously universal idea, the body is, physical existence is highly problematic, but it's where a certain kind of growth occurs that can't occur anywhere else. This is a New Age idea that I used to hear when I was a kid all the time. We're here to learn. When people would say that, I would think, God, that's the stupidest idea. Like, wow, what a great way to learn to, you know, be born into a world of suffering and horror. Look at the kind of life so many different people have. What a superficial idea. But in fact, I think there is real truth to it, and it is said by cultures all over the place, all through time, that there is this funny thing about physical reality. It's a total pain in the neck. It's terrifying. It's agonizing. But a certain kind of specific individual growth occurs here that occurs nowhere else. And, you know, part of that is the idea that the universe is moving forward and we're part of this big sort of cosmic story and we're all growing and developing. Another New Age idea that I also think is actually true.
Next up, we go to Niles, Ohio. Ray's with us east of the Rockies. Always good to have you, Ray. Go ahead.
How you doing?
Good.
I'd like to throw out a question concerning heaven and hell. It occurred to me, and it's rather frightening, most people usually think that heaven and hell require supernatural assumptions, the existence of God, and so forth. But it really doesn't. It requires nothing but an assumption of advanced virtual reality technology, something along the lines that Ray Kurzweil proposes. Now take that in conjunction with nanotechnology. Now imagine one of two possibilities. Heaven and hell exist either now because some very advanced civilization has already created it with their advanced virtual technology, or if that's false, then when we get advanced enough, we're going to create it. Now a hint of that occurs in the movie, you know, the movie Superman 2. There's the Phantom Zone where General Zod and his cohorts are consigned. That's not exactly the equivalent of hell, but it's a technological type of hell. And I thought to myself, what could possibly prevent that? At some point in the future, extrapolate however far you like, allow anyone to get as technologically advanced as you like. If, like Arthur C. Clarke said, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. What's to prevent there from being a virtual reality hell in which your consciousness can be downloaded because someone has created it entirely with technology having nothing to do with the supernatural?
Well, that's pretty elaborate.
You know, what you're saying reminds me a little bit of some of the ideas of a guy named Frank Tipler, who wrote The Physics of Immortality. And I think a lot of these... where you start bringing the abilities of science in and what they can do and or can't do in terms of, like, downloading consciousness and stuff like that, I think the fundamental question it goes down to is individual personal consciousness something that technology can actually touch in any way, or can it not? I mean, you have a lot of people who really do believe in... computer technology and the ability of computers to sort of mimic or even produce consciousness. That's the core problem. What is, you know, in terms of brain science and stuff, they always call it the hard problem, consciousness. What is this? What is consciousness? Most brain scientists don't really like to talk about it because it is so far beyond anything that they can really get their hands on that they just dismiss it. I mean, in the early days of real materialistic science, people wanted to just sweep the question of consciousness out the door. It's like consciousness is nothing. We're not worried about consciousness. We're talking about the brain, and look what a good job we're doing of figuring out how the brain works. The issue of consciousness is a non-issue. It's a non-question. Well, it actually isn't. I think it's the heart of all of it. And the heart of all these kind of science-related questions about what science can do with consciousness is, can science in any way really touch consciousness? Could you download a personal consciousness into a computer and stuff like that? It's not a question I can answer. I don't authoritatively, I can just answer it in terms of my gut reaction to it. I think that consciousness is beyond the touch of any kind of human technology to come anywhere near. It's much vaster. We're just like playing right around the edges of this enormous universe that we think we're getting sort of control of, but it's much, much harder, and our science isn't really coming anywhere near the mystery of what consciousness actually is. Consciousness, your consciousness, our consciousness, right here, right now, is the central mystery of the universe, and it's much harder for anybody to get their hands on than anybody thinks.
Well, let's go to Warwick, Rhode Island. David's with us, Wildcard Line. Hi, David. Welcome to the program.
How you doing? First time I tried calling, and I got through.
Good for you.
Hey, you were talking about you had friends in New York or whatnot, and you said that they talk about death, and they think when somebody dies, that's it. They pay no attention to it. And I can relate to that quite a bit. As a child, I used to leave my body a lot. And as I grew older, you know, I tried to talk to people about that, like friends and stuff, and it was just so far outside their experience. They had nothing to, no way to grasp onto it, so they just, you know, laughed at it or whatnot. And what do you think about the fact that, well, most people, or all people, or specifically those friends of yours, are at a level of unconsciousness where they simply can't grasp certain experiences because they haven't had the energy intake to experience it, and it's outside their domain, and it's basically a fact of consciousness. They're a little more unconscious, say, than you or I, and say there are great spiritual masters in the world who have been in the world for ages, and there are a few steps of their consciousness is a little more than mine and yours, and it's like different degrees. And you can talk about it, you can talk about experiences all you want, but if someone doesn't have a little bit of that experience itself, they can't relate to it. They can relate to it intellectually, sure, but that's a different thing as far as, you know, when you're receiving it, when your emotional body is receiving it and you're living it. You know, there's a lot of people who intellectualize stuff, and usually everything, you know, gets anything that's true gets washed aside. And, you know, religions grow up around that. It becomes nothing more than a political institution with spirituality, you know, kicked to the cornerstone.
I think what happens to you happens to so many people. I think that so many more people, when they are young, when they're teenagers, have these experiences of drifting out of their body. I think it's an absolutely real experience, and I think we live in a culture where what happens to you happens again and again. By that response of the other person, by the other person having that kind of deadness that you talk about, they say, well, sort of politely, huh, that's interesting. But then it just vanishes after that. It's like if you had fallen off a bridge and almost drowned and almost been eaten by a shark and then crawled ashore and told that story, the person would go, wow, you know, tell me more. But if you say, I left my body, there are a lot of people who just instantly turn off to it. They'll politely keep talking just to sort of, you know, keep the conversation going, but they're not paying attention anymore because they don't believe it. And, you know, well, most of the people I know are like that. They're not being rude. They just don't. They just, at a core level, cannot believe that somebody could be lying in bed, half asleep, and then suddenly get up and walk out of the room. I think that is, in fact, a reality that happens to people all the time, and it's not explored enough. And the other problem is, you know, the problem with human beings is we can be intelligent and dumb at the same time. A lot of New Age people, I'm kind of a New Ager, so I can complain about them, I guess, a little bit if I want. A lot of New Age people will talk with tremendous authority about, of course, you can leave your body and stuff like that. But then they don't talk about it with any rigor. And then you have somebody in New York who's maybe an academic or an intellectual, and they know how to talk about things in a really sophisticated way, but they don't talk about this stuff because they don't believe in it. I think we need to learn how to talk about realities like that, about leaving your body, about the fact that the soul, the personality, is more than the physical body, in a more sophisticated way than we do a lot of the time. It's not some sort of smiley, feel-good, superficial New Age idea. It's one of the most important ideas in existence, and it needs a rigorous, focused, it needs rigorous, focused thought. It needs us to bring all of our intelligence to it.
Let's go to Tawny in Clearbrook, Virginia. Get you in before the break here, Tawny. Go ahead. Hello? Yep.
Hey. Okay, I just have a quick thing.
Sure.
It has to go back to, okay, do you think a soul and a spirit are the same, or do you think they're different things? Because when I was like 7 or 8, I seen an orb the size of a volleyball. It come out of the yard, come through the front door, and completely knocked our TV out of whack.
Ptolemy, I believe the soul and the spirit may be one and the same. How about you?
I think it's a matter of language. I think they've been used as the same thing, and they've been used as different things, depending. I think I would just, to answer that quickly, I would go back to my ocean analogy, which actually isn't my analogy. I think it's a young Australian writer who wrote a book called Dark Intrusions. I think his name is Lewis Proud. He said, he had a line somewhere like, there are over, 30,000 different species of fish in the ocean. There are at least as many species of spiritual beings in the spiritual world. I don't think I got that number, 30,000, exactly right, but you get the idea. When I read that, I was like, that's it, of course. The spiritual world is a complicated place full of all kinds of different energies and things as complicated. You know, you go in the water, you have things like a goldfish and you have a blue whale. You have things that are large and small. You have things that are very subtle psychologically and things that are very primitive. I think there are all these different kind of spiritual beings and entities. And all we need to really do is acknowledge that that landscape exists. The ocean is there. And then we can talk about all kinds of orbs and all this strange experience people have of all these different spiritual or quasi-physical entities that people encounter all the time. I mean, it's everywhere.
Let's talk more about your work, The Modern Book of the Dead. Then we'll take final phone calls in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about soulmates. We're going to talk about enhancing your memory the way the mystics did it. That'll be our next Coast to Coast show. When we come back in a moment, as we talk about The Modern Book of the Dead, we'll take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Ptolemy Tompkins with us, The Modern Book of the Dead. Where can you get your book, Ptolemy?
Oh, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the usual kind of places, I think.
All right. Well, that's the way to do it. Did you have fun writing it?
I had a lot of fun writing it, and I mostly had fun reading for it, because I discovered just this ocean of literature that I didn't know existed. You know, people think that near-death experiences, stuff like that, well, a lot of people think they got started in the mid-70s with Raymond Moody, George Ritchie, and stuff like that.
Yep.
Those books are really valuable, but there is this whole other world of literature on the subject that people have kind of forgotten about. A book called The Country Beyond by Jane Sherwood I stumbled across. Then I started finding one after another. People have been writing about this and thinking really intelligently about it for a lot longer than I thought. And I think the most enjoyable part of the book for me was just stepping into this ocean of out-of-print books that told me way more than I was expecting them to.
Let's go to the final phone calls here. Crane, Missouri. Sharon, hello there. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
It's funny that you were talking about how movies affected you when you were a child. Movies have always been important to me, and books. And I saw the movie Vanilla Sky, and that movie really made an impact on me because it seems to tie in with everything you're talking about. You're in one reality, you're going through, you think you know that it's not everything, and then all of a sudden you're given a choice whether to, yes, you want your real life, or no, you want to stay in this so-called kind of dreamlike reality. I think life, death, I think it's all one big thing. I think it's your life, and your life never really ends. It just keeps going on and on in different phases, in different places, in different dimensions. I don't think it ever ends. I think you just go to somewhere else and have this great experience, and then you go on to another one. Do I make any sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you bring up what for me is a hugely important point about movies. To me, I think movies are one of the most important spiritual tools we have. I think
that's a good point. Like What Dreams May Come. There's another one.
Sure. And not just the subject matter, but the way movies work. In so many near-death experiences, you hear people say it was like watching a movie. And there are certain things about movies that I think just remind us of the spiritual world. I think one of the reasons that people gravitated to the technology of movies so instantly is it actually reminds us of what it feels like when we are free of our bodies. The way the camera moves around in movies, the freedom that the camera has, we love that, or at least I know I do. When you go to a movie and suddenly the camera's sort of moving over a landscape, and suddenly it's here with this person, and it's there. The camera's everywhere, and it knows what's going on everywhere, and it tells this story. Well, instantly, the movie is giving you it's telling you something spiritual. It's telling you something about life, which is there's this larger perspective where you can see from all these different directions, and it's free of the limitations that we have while in the body. It can see more of what's going on, and it can see more of the story, and the story is actually going somewhere.
Let's go to Matthew, Seattle, Washington. That's where we're going now. Hi, Matthew.
George Norrie, it's a real honor.
Oh, thank you, Matt.
And you have a wonderful guest on tonight.
It sure is.
I have this tug of war with myself, whether there is a life after death or not. I hear so many things like what your guest is talking about tonight that makes me, you know, totally feel that there is. And then I have this question for him that might even puzzle him, that this so-called New World Order, whatever it is, the Illuminati or the whoever these guys are, you would think they would be the most enlightened people on Earth and have the most information and most knowledge. If they think that there's a life after death and that there's karma and you better be good in this life because you're going to pay for it in your next one, why would they try to carry out such heinous activity like depopulation and control and all of this stuff if they think it's going to come back and get them? Why don't they know the real answers about if there's life after death? So I'll just hang up and take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Maybe they do know. I'm not sure. What do you think, Ptolemy?
I think I would often be dispirited when I was younger, when I would latch on to an idea that really, I'd find an idea that really spoke to me. And then I would see or hear that idea expressed by someone who I didn't agree with totally or who I didn't think was really doing justice to the idea. And it would kind of taint the idea for me, and it would rob it of its power. And I think one of the really important things to remember, at least for me, in terms of the subject matter, is you know, I'm going to go back to this image I keep coming back to for some reason. It's like the ocean. You can have a Soviet sub in the ocean. You can have a guy in a sailboat in the ocean. The ocean is the ocean, and different people can talk about it and get some things right and some things wrong, and it doesn't belong to anybody. I mean, you have so many people complaining about the religion that they grew up in and running from it and trying to find another religion because of bad experiences that they had in their child and in their childhood. And sometimes they're not able to think about spiritual subjects in any way at all because they're tainted. And I think that's one of the most unfortunate things about spiritual ideas, is you can get them associated with one group or one person, and then you can't think about them in a real way anymore. And it's a tragedy because we have to be able to think about spiritual ideas above and beyond everybody else who's talking about them, because nobody owns them. They're above all that, and we need to be able to see and get contact with them.
Well, that's a good point. Okay, let's go back to more calls. Lincoln, Nebraska. Hello, Gabriel. It's your turn.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I had a question about post-traumatic stress disorder with the soldiers coming back and the high rate of suicide. And my experience after Desert Storm was with the PTSD, you're going through such a mental funk that you go to the wonderful VA shrink, and they just don't get it because they weren't trained to deal with the spiritual matter. And my contention is that the Geneva Conference says, yes, you can go kill these people because your commanding officer says so. If you get home alive, you don't go to jail, you're not punished, and here's a couple medals for you. But in the spiritual law, you can't end or impede on someone's life. You can't take their life because they're here to learn and all that and have their experiences. So if you're committing a major no-no of spiritual law, that perhaps that is part of the PTSD that the science of psychology can't address, and usually your priest or pastor can't address. So I just hope these people keep on keeping on, and if they can perhaps address it spiritually, I just have an inner feeling that that has a lot to do with it.
Ah, interesting observation. Do you think, Ptolemy, that there is some kind of spiritual law out there? Many believers, you know, spiritual believers would say yes.
I think we live in a moral universe, and I think it is a tragedy that when people hear moral and or words like that, they immediately start associating them with human institutions. I think morality is something more universal and more enormous even than our biology. I think the sort of the things that at the very center of the universe, this is not original to me because what do I know, but this is what I discovered and felt was true in the research I did. What lies at the heart of everything is our individual personal consciousness and our sense of good and our sense that there is value to the universe. And I think the reason that people in life can be traumatized so awfully is because that's the part of them that's really being hit. That's the part that's being damaged. When somebody comes back from a war and can't deal with the horrible things they had to see and the contradictions they had to deal with and the different people telling them different things, I would humbly submit that the reason it's one of the reasons it's so painful is because that very core experience and knowledge of the goodness of the universe is what has been damaged and compromised by what they've had to go through. That's the source of so much pain in our world. That has been, you know, that's what happens in life. That's what all these traditions say. That's why life is so painful, because that's what we're vulnerable to down here.
Let's go to Linda in Windsor, Canada. Hey, Linda, go ahead.
Hi, George. How do you say your name again?
George?
Ptolemy.
No, I'm kidding.
Is that Egyptian?
It is.
Is that your real name?
It's my real name. My dad was writing a book on Egyptian pyramids. When my mom went into labor, he was reading about a guy named Ptolemy the Gnostic.
Ah, gotcha.
He talked her into it, and there you are.
And he said, well, he said, here comes Ptolemy. I've been dragging it around ever since.
Okay, I wanted to tell you about my own personal experiences that I know are true about life after death. And it happened to, you know, my family who I'm close to, my mother, my sister, and my father. After they passed away, we had connections. My mother with the hug that was felt deep inside, like a pillowy soft, something that no physical person could, you know, reproduce. With my sister, seconds after she passed away, in the room were her daughters and me. And within us was a sort of a spiritual wave. And I was starting to cry. And as soon as I was doing that, a whisper in my ear said, don't cry, I'm okay. And I stopped and I was shocked, but I took it and I said, yep, she's okay. My father, just before he passed away, I got a message from my sister because I was just sitting there one night and it came to me and I didn't quite believe it. But anyway, I told her daughters the message and it was right on. But my father passed away 2 weeks after that and I felt his presence when we were all standing outside the hospital. And I goes, he's here with us. And it was a presence of a spiritual nature. You know, it wasn't just in your head. You could feel it. So I know now that, you know, God's mercy allows our loved ones to connect with us. And there is another place, you know, that we do go. And it's, I can't say for all, but I felt for my own. So I know that there is, you know, this life, like love doesn't stop at the grave. And it continues on, and I guess the deeds of the soul has a lot to do with really where you end up or what you have to do. Like, I do believe in the karmic, you know, part that what we do and to others, you know, we do have to learn in that process.
Well, I think that's a wonderful expression of some of the basic ideas in my book, maybe expressed better than I did, because we get these. I think these things happen to people all the time, and I think we don't. We live in a world with all these different faith traditions, and we don't have a common language for talking about them often. But I think what you just described, those kind of a feeling, which is not, as you said, in the head, but which is real. But we can't quite put our finger on how to describe it because it's hitting a part of us that we don't ordinarily talk about. It's not like suddenly, it's not like somebody nudging your shoulder. It's not like an itch that you scratch. It's this other part of yourself. It's this larger spiritual part of yourself, which is contacted by the part of the person who's leaving their body. And they're saying, I'm still here. It's okay. This happens. It's my understanding that this just is enormously common, and people often don't talk about it as much as they might because they're either embarrassed about it or they're not sure whether they're, you know, it's going to make somebody else embarrassed because it's a taboo subject a little bit in our in a lot of parts of our life, and also because it brings up different people's belief systems and is just slightly uncomfortable. But I think this happens all the time. I think in hospital rooms, everywhere, every day, this kind of experience happens to people, and they know instantly that it's real.
Okay, let's go to San Antonio, Texas, first-time caller. Jim, let's get you in here. Go ahead.
Good evening. Hey, Ptolemy, the name is actually Macedonian.
Oh, yeah? I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, he was the brother of Alexander the Great, one of the companions. But anyway, what religion were you raised in? I'm curious. You haven't mentioned anything about God.
I was, when I say I'm a New Ager, I really was. I was raised in an environment where different sort of...
So you don't have any knowledge of the Bible?
What's that?
You don't have much knowledge of the Bible?
Well, I don't know. What's...
How do you mean it? Was I raised in a Christian environment? I think we're all raised Christian to a certain degree because this is the Christian culture we live in.
Well, true, but, I mean, if you, it's actually Judeo. But anyway, I mean, if you read the Bible, it tells you pretty much the blueprint of creation from start to finish.
If you believe the Bible.
Well, I mean, you don't have to believe the Bible, but let me put it this way. To get to heaven, you have to believe in heaven. And heaven comes to us through the Bible.
You know, it's of course, a belief of many people in this country, and the difficulty of taking that belief seriously without, like, how do I treat you as a believing Christian seriously, but also talk to you in a way that allows in other people without saying, well, you're wrong or they're wrong. I mean, that's the central problem right there as far as I'm concerned. When people start saying, well, no, that's not the way it is, this is the way it is. That's the, you know, road to perdition. It's what's got us into so much trouble. We live in a world where you have to take other people's belief systems seriously and absolutely as true, but not just true for them, true in a larger way. We live in a world of more than one belief system. What does that mean? It means we have to completely change our thinking about what truth is so that I can respect your truth and I can respect somebody else's truth without making it relative. How do you do that? Well, it's impossible, but you have to do it anyhow.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much. The Modern Book of the Dead, Ptolemy Tompkins, and great guest, by the way. Great guest indeed. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.